Welcome to Product Mastery Now, where we simplify the seven knowledge areas for product mastery. These are the product management practices that help you elevate your influence as well as create those products that your customers love. To find all seven, simply go to productmasterynow.com. I'm Chad McAllister, a product management professor, practitioner, and your host. Now, in the past, we've talked about the design sprints. That was with John Zerske. He co-created a way to solve big problems at Google in just 5 days, resulting in the popular 5-day design sprint. But what do you do if you don't have 5 days? How about just 2 hours? It turns out you can still solve a lot of complex problems in a 2-hour design sprint if you know how. Think about that, being able to confidently solve complex problems with a team in only 2 hours instead of days. To tell us how to gain that confidence, Teresa Kane is with us. She is the best-selling author of Solving Problems in 2 Hours, How to Brainstorm and Create Solutions with 2-Hour Design Sprints, whose first edition became an instant hit among the tech teams worldwide. There's an all-new edition for us, which includes new AI tools. She's currently the Director of Product Management, User Experience and Design for TreviPay, a leader in global billing and invoicing. She's also the founder of Lucid Startup Consulting, a training firm focused on research, strategy, and vision for product managers, UX teams, businesses, and entrepreneurs. As a reminder, we do create a written article of everything we discuss. You'll find that resource at productmasterynow.com/499. Teresa, I'm so glad you're with us.
Thanks for having me, Chad. I'm looking forward to being here.
I'm really looking forward to hearing more about the design sprint in 2 hours. So I thought maybe starting with some examples of problems that you've tackled in the past or seen others tackle with a 2-hour design sprint might give us some good context for this. Do you have some examples for us?
Yeah, I've got a ton. So you kind of touch on it. My current role. So I'm currently managing a team of product managers, user researchers, and designers. And we actually perform around 52-hour design sprints a year, and have done it that way for several years. And then I've also coached a little over 300 organizations on this process as well. So I could pull from a multitude of examples. But what I like to really pull from in that comparison for those that really don't have that exposure when thinking through what a 5-day versus 2-hour and how that condensing looks. So a 5-day design sprint is really great for complex problems. So you have something and you have the time. So that means you could schedule it out 3 to 6 months in advance. It's something you can really sit on and think on. A 2-hour design sprint has an immediate demand. And you have to think, I work in the fintech space. There are new competitors coming out in the market every single week. When I started there 6 years ago, we had 5 competitors, and we have over 50 now. I mean, it's amazing. And so a lot of organizations like the one I work for don't really have time to sit on problems for 6 months and then go solve them later. So the concept of 2 hours really is meant for any problem that A, you need an immediate need to go solve it, but also something that you already have ideation on, either it's on your backlog, it's a client request. And really any problem makes for a good problem where you're getting a team together to talk about and ideate it. So some of my favorite problems are, it's funny, I saw this article this week on like how people are saying dashboards are like out now. And so I'm going to pick on dashboards because I feel like every single organization I've ever worked for in the past 20 years, I have built at least one or many dashboards there. And where are you driving the user to actually with dashboards? And dashboards are one where I've done, like, I would say 25% of the design sprints I've done are on dashboards. And what a lot of organizations are hoping to do is drive their users as a call to action when they get to that dashboard. And so most of the time what happens is with a 5-day design sprint, and I have run a number of design sprints where we've compared 5-day versus 2 hours, because this actually started off from an academic perspective. I wrote a white paper, I compared kind of the two, see if you got to the same solution. And from a dashboard standpoint, where a lot of organizations get caught up in a 5-day process is they go too big. They're trying to solve every user persona in that one setting, and then it ends up being really complex. With the 2-hour process, that really allows you to chunk down the focus on the action of who's driving to the dashboard. So let's take an analyst versus an executive role. Those are going to be two different functions of who's going to the dashboard. In fact, the executive, from a lot of the research, they're not going to even going to look at the dashboard. They're maybe going to look at it once a year. They don't want to log into anything and go there and click and filter. Whereas the analyst is going to be in there every day, using it all day, every day for their role. So this is a great example of a two-hour process allows you to bring a group of 15 to 20 stakeholders together, really ideate and focus on the problem that you're having with the dashboard creation and come out with a solution in 2 hours. And that's been something I've been able to press on repeat multiple times with organizations from that functionality standpoint.
Okay. So, and you did do the research, right? You said this started out kind of an exercise look at what can we accomplish in a 5-day design sprint, and could we do that less, right? And it sounds like you ended up at the 2-hour point to really make some efficient use of that time.
Yeah, but I know you mentioned professor in your title too. So I went after 2 master's degrees. So I mean, yep. I really love studying and understanding. And part of this, I mean, is complementary to the 5-day process, right? This is not meant to replace it. This is meant to say, hey, a lot of organizations don't have 5 days. They don't have the time, they don't have the budget, or they don't have the team. I mean, if you look at the number of solopreneur organizations that are popping up today, tell me how making use of 5 days when you have a team of one is going to work for this process. So the adaptation to 2 hours is really for all types of organizations, whether you're enterprise or you're a solopreneur, where so I'm able to bring in experts, and there's also a lot of third parties out there that'll supply users for you, like user interviews, user testing that you're able to work with. So that's what kind of makes it fun. And I like to talk about the academic part of it because I want everyone to understand that there is so much value in a 5-day and a 2-hour process.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the challenges with the 5-day sprint that some organizations ran into our teams, a lot of energy and effort goes in that, right? Freeing up the team for 5 days is a big deal. And then afterwards, I haven't seen any research to say what the percentage is, if there's anything collected on this, but action isn't always taken, right? You spend those 5 days, mm-hmm. and then we end up with something that sounds promising, but there's not resources and time to now take action on what came out of that. So I like this idea of creating these smaller chunks, like what can we do in 2 hours and then put that, actually implement it and make use of it. So would love for you to take us through kind of the framework for how this happened. Obviously, the details are in your book, and we'll have a link to that too. But Solving Problems in 2 Hours is the title of the book. Very clear title, love that. But can you take us through the framework for how to actually do this? Where do we get started?
Yeah, so ultimately, it's really parsing down. And this concept really takes the best of both worlds of design thinking and design sprints, right? It's not design sprints, for those who don't know, that was derived from design thinking. So we can't forget the days of IDEO, Stanford's Design School. So ultimately, really taking in the mindset of thinking about the user first, it's really kind of at a high level broken down into 3 different areas. So you're understanding who your user is, like who you're solving the problem for. You're exploring the problem and then you're ideating. And as part of this and parsing it down into those 3 different elements, what really holds up a lot of organizations, again, with the longer design sprints is really being able to understand the user. So a lot of the organizations that I work with, what I encourage, whether you're running a 2-hour or a 5-day, is know who you're solving the problem for. Like, it's something so simple that a lot of people just think they have this really great idea. It's going to go out there. It's going to make millions of dollars. And that's going to be the win. And they really don't think about who they're solving it for. So like even just a couple weeks ago, I was working with a bunch of startup founders and it brought problem to the table. And I was like, all right, so tell me a little bit about, they weren't familiar with user personas. I was like, tell me who this product is for. Who's going to be using this product? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'm hoping to put the product out there and then people will just like find it and they'll use it. And so when you think about that response, right? I mean, inside my eyes are burning as I'm listening, or I'm like, okay, great. This is a great problem in itself. Let's solve that first of who is going to use your product. So most organizations that are seasoned, like the one I worked for, most that have product UX and design teams already are going to know who your user persona is. And that's kind of one of the key differences of, first and foremost, if you don't know who you're solving the problem for, that's part of that understanding. So you're not just understanding who is using your product, you're understanding what challenges are they having. Forget your product. What are the problems that they're facing in their day-to-day? And let's talk about a little bit of AI. Some of the themes I've seen as of late is the theme of automation. A lot of challenges of wanting to solve problems for users that are doing a lot of manual tasks in their day. It's taking up a lot of time. Maybe they're popping between screens. Maybe they are using their mobile device or not even on a desktop computer. Maybe they're moving buildings while they're doing their different tasks. Those are the problems that you need to uncover of let's take a step back and understand with this first stage of a 2-hour design sprint of who is the customer? Who are they? What are their problems? And so that's really that's first stage there, being able to understand the value of who you're solving the problem for. Mm-hmm. And from there, you're diving a little. Oh, go ahead.
Just to underscore this, my background is engineering, and I remember being in a group where our lead guy, who was absolutely brilliant, and maybe this worked well for him because he was absolutely brilliant, would say, we never need to discuss a problem for more than 15 minutes because the first solution you come across in the first 15 minutes is almost always the right one. And that never sat well with me, right? And I think there is a distinction here between engineering problems that might be appropriate that we're reflecting on internally, like what is the right algorithm or data structure for some mechanism in a program, versus actually knowing what, and with my university professor hat on, when teams are generating some kind of new innovation project in a course, I always ask them to create a business model canvas that starts with what's the customer segment. And the customer segments are always pretty broad. It's like, no, we're going to serve families. Okay, are these families with young kids? Are these families with grown kids? Are these families with single parents? There's a whole lot more detail here that we need to understand who is it we're actually serving. And so diving into a clear understanding among everyone on the team is really important, because even without that, we probably have different pictures of who the customer is with just kind of a casual discussion. And so I appreciate you underscoring the importance of knowing who the customer is and what the challenges are.
I love that you said that too. So I have run this process not with just product teams, but I've also run it with operations teams, engineering teams, even like teachers, schools. And you make me think when I run this with engineering teams, like I married an engineer, first of all, so I have like all the love for engineers, but every time I run a design sprint that's got all engineers, they just want to go straight to the solution. They're like, stop wasting my time. Right. Like, I don't want to talk about the customers. Like, let's talk about the solutions. And I'll have to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to not talk. I'm going to mute you. No, I'm kidding. But I think that's just like the nature of the mindset of an engineer, right? Is that is their role. Their role is to like solve the problem and solution. So it's kind of the first instinct. But I do think when you think about it and the differences of a 2-hour versus a 5-day, I just talked a little bit about the academic. You know, this research started 5 years ago at this point, where I ran a number of problems with 5-day and a 2-hour, and 80% of the time we came to the same solution. So I think that when you think about what you just said there in the first 15 minutes, right or wrong, you can agree with me or not agree with me, but 80% of the time in the test studies run of a 5-day versus 2 hours, we ran into almost the exact same solution. And so I think for me, if I'm going to have, I have so many problems I'm trying to solve every day. We have client requests. Every company, organization wants to continue to grow, solve more problems, release new features. Would you rather spend 2 hours and solve 50 problems in a year, or do 3 5-day design sprints and solve 3 problems, right? So the intent is, I think a lot of organizations were really looking at the 5-day model and only doing it a couple times a year. And what I'm saying is you should be doing it more. You should be doing it much more than you're doing it all the time. But organizations wouldn't really have the capability to go run 55-day design sprints in a year, right? So that's where this 2-hour design sprint comes in.
That's brilliant. And I appreciate knowing that the difference in your outcomes there, 80% is a really good number. Okay, so where we start, we have to have a clear understanding of the customer, what their challenges are, and make sure we're grounded in that as a team.
Yep. And next, you're probably familiar with the how might we framework of how might we frame a challenge into a question. So that second stage is really exploring the problem a little bit more, of rethinking how you would kind of reframe that into a question and really exploring the nature of how the problem got there. So again, one of the key things, like I just want to talk about, one of the biggest values of a design sprint isn't something that is always said, right? Of course, I say it in the book, but it, like, when you think about a 2-hour design sprint, it's not always about the customer, the problem, and the solution, but about the stakeholders working together. And a lot of what I see with organizations I work with is they're not talking to each other, therefore they're not on the same page, especially with the COVID pandemic forcing organizations on a lockdown, some in a hybrid environment, some still remote. A majority of my team, I manage product UX and design. A majority of my team is still remote for most of their entire work year. We have once a month where everyone is required to come in for a week type of mindset. And so I think with that type of mindset, knowing every organization is doing something a little different, if you're not getting groups of people together, they're just simply not talking. And the 2-hour design sprint, when you're rethinking and challenging how you can solve problems, really allows you to get that group together for 2 hours. And 2 hours isn't a big time commitment. So that's right. Just one value I want to point out during this process. It's not just about talking about the problems, but getting that group of stakeholders together to talk about it together. That's the value. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people can fit that into their schedules. It's just like an extended meeting where we're actually trying to get a good outcome.
Right. And that's where the second stage, the third stage, I could talk all day about the third stage because I, as a product practitioner, right, I love ideating and I love coming up with solutions. But the third stage, a lot of times I get asked when I'll come with organizations that have run design sprints in the past and brought in firms is like, there's no way we're going to be able to solution. And usually what ends up happening, there's a lot of shock and awe sometimes during a 2-hour design sprint when I come in and I moderate, because they're like, oh my gosh, like I did not think we were gonna like come up with these solutions like in a couple hours. And it's not, you're really deciding as a team what your solution you're gonna move forward with, but that's kind of the shock and awe. And this ideation, I mean, again, some of the biggest benefits were the cause of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I usually like to run these in a collaborative tool. There's been a lot of change in collaborative tools, but I had migrated my whole team to Figma years ago. And so I use FigJam. Most of the time, I also use Miro and Mural, and depending on the organization. But some of the value there is also in that collaborative tool. So the reason why you're able to ideate so quickly is you're spending 2 hours together looking immediately in a tool at what everyone is doing. Even if we're in person together, we're still using a collaborative tool. And you think about the difference of walking around a room with an old school design sprint where you're writing on post-it notes, you're trying to understand everyone's handwriting. That information is coming at you slower than being in a collaborative tool where you're absorbing it as people are typing. You're constantly thinking and innovating. So this is really efficiency in itself of you can be more efficient by using this process and solving problems more quickly as an organization, right? So when you get to this ideation stage, this third stage, this is where the magic happens, right? You've now thought about the customer, you've thought about the problem as a group, and you're ideating and you're pitching on your concept as a group. And as a group, you're voting on what you think, what solution would solve the problem the best for the customer, for the problem that you have chosen. And so again, and statistically 70 to 80% of the time, you are going to come out with a successful solution that you can move forward. And I think one of the key differentiators as a 5-day design sprint is with the 2-hour design sprint, you are deciding at the end of the 2-hour design sprint whether you want to move forward to testing and prototyping. Where a 5-day design sprint, no matter if everyone in the group is not on board with it, you are automatically bought in to test the prototyping and testing. And before I had parsed down design sprints to 2 days, 1 day, 4 hours, 3 hours, 2 hours, over the years, I had a number of prototypes where we brought it into the customer and like, this is horrible. Like, no, you're not hitting the mark at all. And this is when we brought in really expensive firms to come in and run this process, right? I mean, I wasn't running as the moderator at this point years ago. So I think that's something to keep in mind of you're saving time and money by getting that iterative feedback earlier before committing to final prototype and testing. And for most organizations that have invested in product user experience and design, being able to take something when you have a design system is so much quicker these days. I mean, look how rapidly prototypes can be built these days. I mean, even as a product practitioner, I can go build one in a couple hours, let alone my designers that can do it even quicker. So
Okay, very good. So step three here is really the ideation part, where we're trying to take that, well, back up here, our understanding of the customer who we're actually serving, the understanding of the problem now, how might we solve something for that customer, and now ideating on possible solutions. And you're using design tools in real time. You said whether you're in person with, I guess, people on tablets or laptops, right, working together on this.
Yep.
So we can kind of see what's evolving, or that easily works remotely. And you said Miro is one of the tools you like to use. And for listeners that don't know, you might want to share us a little more. That's one that I do use. I think of it as kind of just a general whiteboard that you can put all kinds of templates on. And Figma is more, from my understanding, I haven't actually used it much, more of a user interface design type tool. How do you use those?
Yeah, so there's Figma and then there's FigJam. So, and now they have two separate license models for it. So Figma is really where your design and prototyping are going on, your design system. And then FigJam is, a sense, just like Miro. And I used Envision for years, which would obviously there have gone. So, but ultimately, I mean, I'll be honest, like I love FigJam like a little more than Miro and Mural, but I use all of them. But they're part of like the FigJam, like FigJam allows you to continue investing. I think because I'm in it every day anyways for work, I'm constantly, it's like Outlook at this point, right? You're constantly using it every day and you're used to it. You know everything about it. So, but either way, I mean, it could be any tool. And in fact, I mean, I have, if for those that aren't wanting to use collaborative tools, this process can still be done in the old school way. But I think that is an inherent value of being in the age that we're in, the technology age, right? Of being able to have these advanced technologies to help us. So,
right. Like my old school way is a whiteboard. I get a lot of value out of a whiteboard if we're meeting together. But then you have to translate anything that's on the whiteboard, right, into some kind of artifact that's easier for the team. That's an extra step. And if you can just do it as part of the process and have an easy takeaway for everyone to, you know, point to and share, that works really well. Okay. That's great. So that's kind of what happens in a design sprint here, right? The two-hour version. Clear understanding the customer, clear understanding the problem, and then ideating together on potential solutions for that, right? What do you see takes place after a design sprint?
Yeah, you touched on this a little bit earlier. That's one of the biggest challenges, right, of any design sprint type is that handoff afterwards. And I 100% agree with that. And when we talk about the failure rate that can happen, whether you're running a 5-day or 2-hour, that's something to kind of keep in mind as well. So I think that for the most part, that when you have a process like a 2-hour design sprint, the intention is that you're able to do a handoff and work on it immediately. So because we're running so many a year at TreviPay, when we run a 2-hour design sprint, it goes right into a user story and on the backlog for our team. Like it is worked in that quickly. And that is something that happens with a lot of organizations as well. So when you already have really well-run teams, we have over 20 engineering teams across the globe, and it's a really well-run product and technology shop. So when you have that fluidity across your teams, you can bring those in immediately, and that's the biggest value, right? But when you don't have that support, maybe you don't have those teams, you don't have the resources, maybe you are a smaller organization, and that's where the handoff becomes a little more tricky. So who owns the handoff? Who is going to be the one that's setting up meetings with the customer to validate the prototype? That's really the trickiest piece, is who owns the handoff of every item and who's responsible for those actions. And oftentimes, if you aren't running UX internally, it's surprising. A lot of organizations don't have UX shops today. And before the COVID-19 pandemic, Nielsen Norman had come out with a report that said they expected the user experience and research industry to really explode by 50x from a role standpoint. And I'd love to see the adjusted numbers with the COVID pandemic, but I do not think that's going to be the case anymore, especially because that was before ChatGPT had come out. And right now, I think what everyone's trying to do in product user experience and design is figure out how can AI complement how can it be used in your role but not solve your role, right? I mean, I think a lot of organizations are looking at it that way of, yes, you could tell ChatGPT to create a user persona for you, but you still have to go validate it. It doesn't cite any resources. You don't really know where it came up with the data. And generally, it's pretty accurate, but it's not your data. You didn't write it. So that's something that I think we have to kind of keep in mind of what's the impact of automation and how can that help the handoff too? I had a question asked me when I was running a design sprint last week of, why do I need to do this process? I can just ask ChatGPT to solve the problem for me. And they're kind of saying it cheekily. And I was like, okay, let's throw it in there. Let's see what it says. And we asked ChatGPT. I know they had a user adoption problem. So we ran a 2-hour design sprint on how to increase user adoption for a subset of their users that were not interacting on mobile devices. And I won't call out which generation this was, but we could probably narrow down who doesn't like using mobile devices pretty easily. And ultimately asked ChatGPT, and ChatGPT came up with a bunch of items. And so we ran the 2-hour design sprint and we compared our solution options to what ChatGPT had. And it would have been really interesting if they were like exactly the same. But here's the reality is ChatGPT doesn't know your product. They don't know your users.
Right.
So you have to kind of use what you get with a grain of salt with that. So,
yeah. Yeah, we're certainly not at the point where ChatGPT is creating better patterns for us than we can gain from our own research and insights of customers. So maybe someday, but then I don't know what we'll all do. So
exactly.
I'm just curious about the cadence of this. So if you're doing 50 2-hour design sprints a year, do you plan on one a week? And are you looking for significant problems like the user access on this particular class's feature is really low? So are you looking, do you just keep these basically in the calendar and then be looking for a significant problem each week that makes sense to bring to a design sprint?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I sit over, we have around, let's see, we have around 30 to 40 in terms of like a team of like product UX and design. So a lot of these design sprints, like I'm probably at this point running like maybe 4 to 7 design sprints a year, and the rest of it's being run by the rest of the team. And that's one of the beauties of when the 5-day design sprint, when the book came out, a lot of organizations hired third parties to come in and run those. And with this process, with the 2-hour process, that is meant for anyone at the org to run it as the moderator. So you don't need a third party. In fact, I recommend a subject matter expert run a 2-hour design sprint. But I found a lot of failure points bringing in third parties that know nothing about your industry, your clients, to come in and make a recommendation for me on my business problems. That never made sense to me. So that's really the intent, is to bring in a subject matter expert to run this process for you. And with that, all of my product managers, designers, UX researchers, and in fact, now folks in marketing and operations are trained on this process, and they are able to go implement it whenever they want. And every now and then they'll just like tell me like, hey, I ran this and like, here's the results. Like, what do I do next? You know, you asked on the action part, right? And that really is the number one thing of, okay, how do I take the solution we had and actually go run with it and execute it when you're not in product and technology? Because I think this process has morphed outside of the world of product and technology a bit. And that's something, that's a consideration, right? Those steps are going to be a little different. You're not going to have someone that's going to go, an engineer, to go work on the solution you have. You need to go solve it. Who's going to work on that solution for you?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah. So it sounds like this has been spread out to the organization. People have been empowered. They can do their own 2-hour design sprints, which is probably great for you to see, right? How this is being put into use in the organization. But they're calling design sprints as they need to, as they
run. Yeah. It's ad hoc. Ad hoc. It's not a planned set weekly meeting.
Because it's 2 hours, it's easy to do.
Yeah. But also, I mean, you have to think the stakeholder mix, right? So every 2-hour design sprint has its own unique stakeholder mix. And so there wouldn't really be any way, inherent way to do that. And I also think you would kind of have a little bit of design sprint fatigue. I mean, I know back when I would run like a multi-day design sprint, like most people would take like even like a 3-day one. The last 3-day design sprint I ran before the pandemic, like everyone took PTO like the last 2 days because they were just done. Their brains were fried.
It is a lot. So, yeah. Excellent. Very good. And you mentioned in the very beginning of this, the connection to IDEO and design thinking. And I remember, for anyone that wants to go find this on YouTube, if you look up IDEO shopping cart, when I first saw this video of them designing a new shopping cart in a week for a grocery store, that was the challenge they were given by a news program. I thought, wow, this is how innovation happens, right? This is how you understand your customer and the different stakeholders in that customer group, and how you go through the work together to dive into the problem and then the ideation about possible solutions. So I think that illustrates it well. And you have condensed this for solving complex problems into 2 hours. And love that you brought this to us. We do like innovation quotes, and I asked you to bring one for us as well. What is that, and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, so when I think about innovation, there's a really great quote by Albert Einstein that really, like, when I think about, like, the foundation of this book and, you know, why I have kind of started on this process and pressed forward. I know we both are kind of in the academic realm, right? We, like, love having the academic realm. So there was actually a quote by Albert Einstein that says, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." And so if you think about that, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. So it's kind of one of those things you have to think about, and it kind of blows your mind for a second. But ultimately, really how that has influenced me in my career, before even going after a couple master's degrees, I was an English and journalism double major. So I am really big on reading and understanding history and bringing that into it. So for me, I think that there are always new ways of thinking. And even the 5-day process is made off design thinking. You know, the 2-hour process is made off innovating from those. We constantly need to be reinventing ways that we've been thinking. And there is no right or wrong answer. But the reality is, I mean, look at the amount of automation. We were just talking about ChatGPT. You know, it could take you going from, like, let's just say a company does use ChatGPT for personas, and you go from interviewing 5 to 10 people, really kind of honing on that persona, to just asking ChatGPT in a couple seconds. So tell me, how would it make sense to go spend 5 days solving a problem when you can do it in less time? And in fact, I've had people say, I'm just going to throw it in ChatGPT and skip the whole thing altogether. I mean, no one has time that they did, I guess, is how we're all thinking about it, right? Generationally, the shift of automation has really changed, and they're expecting things instantly, instant gratification at their fingertips. So that's something to really keep in mind. And that's always inspired me to keep thinking above and beyond. And even before artificial intelligence was cool, I had worked on machine learning and natural language processing tools and automation for years before it came out. So, I mean, I think there's so much more work that we can be doing, and we could use that to help us get along the way, but we need to be solving problems more quickly and thinking differently.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having a clear understanding of the problem and different thinking that got us, that there's one way of thinking that got us into the problem. We need new thinking to help us get out of that problem. So there's always more to learn, for sure. How can people find out about your book? Clearly Amazon's a source, but you might have a better place to point us to, as well as the training work you do and anything else that you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, so they could go to the website, 2hourdesignsprints.com, or obviously you mentioned the book, Solving Problems in 2 Hours, is on Amazon. I also, like, I'm a networker personality, so always feel free to follow me on LinkedIn with content. And I also have a number of templates out on the FigJam community if you search for Teresa Kane.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing the information. Really delighted to be able to hear about these 2-hour design sprints. And I think they probably, what you shared with us inspired many listeners to check out, hey, what can I get done in 2 hours? And how could we formulate that and standardize that? So good resources in your book to make that clear to all of us. So appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, I appreciate you being here as well. I do fund this podcast by the training that I do for product managers and leaders. There's 3 versions of that. One is just to help product managers get better grounded. That's my rapid product mastery experience. Another one is to help product leaders really become innovation leaders. And then finally, for senior executives to understand what's different about leading innovation compared to leading the organization and their functions. You'll find those resources at productmasterynow.com. And let me know if there's any questions about that I can help you with. As always, everyone, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.